Hello, hello. Thank you for joining me. You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. My name is Andrew Popel, and this is Final Draft. Every week it is books, writing, and literary culture. Today I have two fantastic new books to share with you. But look, before we get started, I do want to acknowledge 2SER broadcasts from the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. Now, I record the show from home. I am on the lands of the Darug and Gundungurra people. I always want to start the show. I think it is so important that we acknowledge that we are on stolen land, and I want to acknowledge the traditional owners, their ongoing connection to that land. Sovereignty was never ceded on these lands, and today we are going to be talking about, you know, what it means to be Australian. So it is important to acknowledge that one of the things that it means to be Australian today is that we live on stolen land. It always was, always will be Aboriginal land, and those are wounds that are yet to be healed. Now, as I mentioned, I have two fantastic new books today. I have two fantastic books that look at being Australian. And look, as so often, sometimes when we want to look at things, we need to look at them from an outside perspective. So the two books that I have are from people that have come to Australia and made Australia their home. Christopher Raja's Into the Suburbs, A Migrant Story, tells Chris's tale of moving from Calcutta to Melbourne in the 80s when he was just a boy, and a perspective on a time in history, Australia in the 80s, but a perspective also on what it means to be Australian, what it might mean to become Australian. Ashley Kalagian-Blunt's How to Be Australian is both similar but incredibly different. Ashley came to Australia in her 30s as a Canadian from freezing Winnipeg. And she had a very different experience of, you know, becoming Australian or trying to figure out how to be Australian. They are the two books that I'm going to be sharing on the show today. So if you are Australian, if you're interested in what it means to be Australian, these are two books that you may well want to discover. They are coming up on Final Draft. You're on 2SER 107.3, and it's all after this very short break.
2SER wishes to acknowledge the custodians of the land from which we broadcast, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation and the Wadumatagal clan of the Darug Nation, and their elders past, present and emerging. We acknowledge and respect their continuing culture and the contribution they make to the life of this city and this region.
You are on 2SER 107.3. You are listening to Final Draft. It is books, writing and literary culture. My name is Andrew Popel, and I am joined on the line remotely by Christopher Raja. He is the author of plays, essays and a novel, The Burning Elephant. Today we are discussing his memoir, Into the Suburbs. It is Chris's story of leaving Calcutta and beginning a life in Melbourne. Now, Chris, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Andrew.
I want to start, look, I think for many of us, we can only imagine in broad brushstrokes what life in Calcutta might be like. Now, of course, you lived there as a child, you have visited as an adult, but can you evoke for us something of the contrast between the metropolis and the suburbs that you come to describe in your story?
So Calcutta was where I was born, so in some ways I take it for granted. It was a place, you know, full of bustle and noise and colour, as most people would probably imagine. It's also a place that I hold very close to my heart. So it's a place where family, my mother, my dad, my father, my aunts, my uncles, my cousins live. And I also went to school there. I went to an old school there called La Martinière, which is quite a well-known school. And my dad was a headmaster there and my mum was a teacher. So Calcutta was, you know, an ordinary, normal place in my eyes, because that's all I knew from the age of 0 to 11. So when I came to Australia, people would ask me that question. So what was Calcutta like? And I would give them what I just told you, which was a seemingly normal, bland answer. And they would say, oh, is that how you saw Calcutta? And I'd say, yes. And then I'd say, but Melbourne. Now let me tell you what Melbourne was like. It was so quiet and strange and confusing and alien.
It sounds very much like we all grow up with this idea of normal, and to a certain extent, everything becomes a by comparison to that base state that we gain as a child. Do you feel like you ever lost that?
Yeah.
Or it changed?
Yeah, I feel I have I've lost that numerous times. I began writing, in a sense, to find this concept of home. And I went and I started to write, search for home, because, you know, growing up in Melbourne and Calcutta and spending a lot of time in Alice Springs, I became very interested in this issue of class, belonging, identity, mental health, coming of age. And these were topics that, you know, I had to face as I grew up, but I also saw as I traveled around Australia, went back to India, and I started to notice different things. And to come to terms with those different things or themes, I had to write them down.
I was intrigued when I came across Into the Suburbs. And the first thing that struck me, of course, was the title. And, you know, a quick Google search of the words into, if you leave into open, it reveals a litany of ominous titles: Into the Wild, Into the Badlands, Into the Woods, Into the Breach, Into the Unknown. Well, we talked before about the normalizing of the things that happen in your youth. And I think a huge proportion of people born in Australia are born and grow up in the suburbs. And we take away different impressions of it. And perhaps that says more about me than any title you could have come up with, that I immediately think of the suburbs as a place that can be fraught and perhaps a little dangerous in its quiet, you know, seeming conservatism.
For me, there's a certain exoticism. For me, the exotic lies in the suburbs. You know, especially Melbourne suburbs. I mean, from the contrast between Calcutta and Melbourne, I find the exotic lies in Melbourne, in the suburbs of Melbourne, where you look at your neighbour's fence and it might have a carved lion that they were interested in Italy, and they brought this remnant of a lion or an eagle, and they placed it on their suburban fence. Now, as I walked the streets of the suburbs, I would see these things and think, wow, how do I make sense of this? And to be honest, it took me a long time to see these things in a fresh way. I had to go away from the suburbs. I had to go to Alice Springs, and I had to go back to India, and I even had to go to Europe to actually see Australia with fresh eyes. So this book's been in the gestation for a long time.
It felt like in the story you were describing how you were wrestling with this way to make sense of what was culturally happening to you, but then also make sense of this idea that, you know, there were racist, I won't even say undertones, there were racist overtones. I mean, the racism you describe at school is beyond horrific. You were ridiculed, physically assaulted because of how you looked, and just the fact of your difference. How do you feel about Australia looking back at that time?
Yeah, it's very interesting looking back at the time. So while I was writing the book, I tried to capture an immediacy. There is an immediacy of into the suburbs where you feel like you're in the moment and the narrator is, you know, keeping you there. But the fact that the book was written with a lot of a gestation period, I have different views now on that time, and I have different views on some of those issues. For example, you know, that overt racism that made me so angry and so sad and so fearful at the time, I now look back and I think, what was really going on there? And who was being racist to me? And I realized that they were migrants too. They weren't Aboriginal. They were foreigners. They were strangers in the strange land themselves. And so there was this inert, it was a very active, it was a very uncomfortable feeling that everyone seemed to have looking back as to who really belonged. And it was I think their sense of lack of belonging and was highlighted by my difference. And possibly even my brownness reminded them of the people who actually own this land, which are brown people. This is a land made up of brown people. But I didn't know that when I first came. I thought being brown and being called a Boon and a black was indicated I was foreign and different. But now, years and years later, I realize I have more in common with the original inhabitants of the land than I did with the people that made fun of me for being a foreigner in Australia.
I realized, actually, I want to take a quick divergence, because I realize in a story that is essentially about you and your life, it might seem strange to talk about spoilers, but I'm going to change this question a little bit, because I don't want to reveal a part of a very important part of the latest story. But at a funeral, you relate overhearing snatches of conversation, including an aunt who responds to her husband's rebuke with, she says, "Not all of us can become Australians, however hard we try." And I wondered, reflecting on that, what did you think about this idea that there is a way to become Australian, that there might be a way to become Australian? And if there is it even a particularly desirable thing to be?
Well, that's this idea of coming to become an Australian, as much as we try, I've noticed even in the 30-odd years that I've lived in Australia, that notion of what an Australian is has changed so much in just such a short time. This idea of coming to become an Australian, has now flummoxed nearly everyone. When as more and more people are now dealing with the idea of Australia being not terra nullius and having had all these different language groups and tribes here long for time immemorial, and how do we make sense of that? And so, as writers and thinkers and artists are wrestling with this question, so are politicians and so are other members of the society. And so this idea of who's an Australian and how do we become an Australian has become really complex now. And so hopefully my work adds to that debate about what it means to be an Australian.
It seems though, that naming, and the act of naming, can also be an act of possession, and we come to that idea of Australian, naming something as Australian is problematic and complicated, and it seems almost shamefully in Australia it becomes a case of to paraphrase the idea of art, I don't know what art is, but I know it when I see it, and that becomes another means of exile and exclusion. Because it's easy to then say, well, that's un-Australian, that absolutely horrid term that gets pulled out whenever someone wants to delegitimize another person in this country. You get accused of being un-Australian. As you say, it's a very complicated, it's a very fluid thing, but I think it's a discussion in the country that needs to be more sophisticated, and it needs to embrace more voices. I will just mention, I am speaking with Christopher Raja, and we are discussing Into the Suburbs, A Migrant's Story. And I don't think the listeners need reminding this, Chris, but the arts have been so important for people during the time of COVID. For everyone who is enjoying the arts, it is important to support the arts. And you're doing that by listening to Chris and I discuss his book on Final Draft. But get out, order from your favourite bookshops. Some of them are still delivering. Support local business and support local authors. Chris, thank you so much. It's been absolutely brilliant to chat.
Andrew, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me. And yes, definitely support local bookshops and local writers who are really struggling this time, like so many others.
And let's keep talking about supporting local artists. You are on 2SER 107.3. Now, I'm Andrew Popeland. Just there, we heard from Christopher Raja. His new book is Into the Suburbs. And we're going to take a track before we return. I have another fantastic book, two books today, with Ashley Kalagian-Blunt's How to Be Australian. But to get us there, we have got a WA band. This is Hair Care, and the track is called For Koji. Now get out, support Hair Care, support local artists while we're still locking down, while we can't go to gigs. This is Hair Care for Koji.
Like to get to know you some, and what you little lightning you can't hide. It's like I said, it's all.
Tuned in to 2SER 107.3. My name is Andrew Popel, and just there we heard from WA band Hair Care. That track was called For Koji. Let's keep supporting incredible Australian artists wherever we find them. Buy their tracks until we can go out and see them live. And keep buying books, like the next one that I'm going to bring up for you. Oh, I don't know about anyone else, but it's pretty cold where I'm sitting right now. Even with the heater on, my feet feel like ice. And speaking of that heater, my cat Rocket is lying close enough. I expect to smell singed fur any minute. But I daren't complain about any of this to my next guest. Ashley Kalagian Blunt escaped the positively arctic climate of Winnipeg to study in Australia. She's the author of My Name is Revenge. Her writing has appeared in the Griffith Review and Kill Your Darlings, amongst others. She's also appeared at Story Club and writers festivals back when that was a thing we could do. And she has penned an outsider's view on life down under called How to Be Australian. It's out now through Affirm Press. Ashley, welcome. Thanks for joining me on Final Draft.
Thank you so much for having me today, Andrew. And I just want to acknowledge that I'm speaking to you from Gadigal land, part of the Eora Nation, and I want to acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia on whose land I wrote this book and pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging.
How to Be Australian is your journey to becoming an Australian. You've been here nine years now. And I think journeys, though, they're always best viewed from their starting place. So can you take us back to that initial decision, back when you were trying to convince your partner, Steve, to pack up his life and move? What did Australia mean to you then, if you can kind of cast your mind back that far? And what did you think then it meant to be an Australian?
Oh, that's such a great question. So I really had such a simplistic idea about Australia. Like back living in Canada, growing up in Canada, we didn't have, you know, a lot of history outside of sort of modern European history. So I didn't learn much about Australia beyond the fact that it was a colony similar to Canada. So we had that shared cultural history. But I think I had a very simplistic concept of Australia because I had this sort of, you know, popular culture image of beaches and sunshine. And I lived in a place where winter could last, you know, 7 months. It would go down to minus 40. Some winters it would stay at minus 40 for 3 months. And it's just such a miserable experience to live in that depth of cold, particularly for that long. You don't see a lot of sunshine. You really can't spend any time outside. It's very dangerous to drive. So in my head, I just had this image of Australia as warm and sunny and beachy. And therefore, everybody there would be happy because why wouldn't you be happy with that kind of climate? And that was really all I felt like all I needed to know.
And I mean, I don't think that's a very surprising image that you have there. And even within Australia, I know so many people, so many friends who, myself even, at one point or another, the desire to just to be on the coast, to live near the beach, and our popular culture, even our literature has at times very much had that notion of the bush or the beach. And we kind of, it's almost like we leapfrog over all of the places that are also a part of Australia. Now, more than anything else, I got the sense from your book that being Australian or being in Australia is an auditory experience. Even before you knew their names, both you and Steve were transfixed by the birdsong or the laughter or the squawks that surrounded you. But conversely, you worried that your accent marked you out. Too often you were thought to be American, to have the wrong accent.
Yeah, that's a really great observation, actually, because the soundscape of Australia is incredible, and I talk about the book how much I love it and how it just it strikes me as so distinctive and so captivating, and it really is something that, you know, whenever I've gone away since moving here that I miss. But at the same time, yeah, that accent thing, as you can hear, I still have a pretty strong North American accent, and that's not going to change. And it's the kind of thing where, you know, I understand my accent marks me as an outsider. And whenever any individual person asks me about it, I'm completely fine with that. But when I get asked repeatedly about it, it just internally sort of, it reminds me, hey, like, you don't belong here. What are you doing here? And that compounded, particularly when I was working so hard to fit in, was, you know, it made me really think about constantly about the fact that I'm an outsider.
What did it mean to you to discover this history of Indigenous cultural appropriation and cultural destruction that you were finding out about this country?
Oh, that's an incredible question. So, I mean, Canada has a similar history of cultural destruction. It has been labeled cultural genocide in Canada. And we have, you know, again, similar problems that we are struggling to address, working to address. And, you know, it's a massive challenge to address such deep-rooted historical injustice, especially when the reality of that injustice has been largely hidden or denied and so remains unknown by so much of the population. And an example of that is when I read Bruce Pascoe's Dark Emu, that made me aware of just how much we don't know about Australia's Indigenous peoples, the incredible knowledge that they had of the land and the waters, and how much of that was destroyed and then written out of history by colonialists. And so I felt that when given the immense privilege of becoming a citizen, that also came with a responsibility to be politically engaged, to agitate for change, to talk about these issues, to continue educating myself, to donate to organizations doing important work like Sisters Inside and the Healing Foundation and so many others. And part of that, you know, reading more Indigenous authors like Stan Grant and Clara G. Coleman and Tara June Winch. And so I really feel strongly about that process and the importance of it, partly because, as I described in the book, my great-grandparents were survivors of genocide. So I have, and I spent 10 years studying that and writing about it. So I have some insights into, you know, the impact of intergenerational trauma and the ongoing legacy and how that impacts both individuals and communities.
Part of your original desire to move, you were going to study and complete a research project on the Armenian diaspora, of which your family is a part. And through your studies in the book, you describe connecting with the Armenian community in Sydney. And at a dinner party, one of your hosts reflecting on her Armenian and Australian identity, says, "I guess I'm both, but also not enough of either." And that's an incredibly powerful perspective on how identity works. How did that make you feel about your own identity as, I guess at the time you were still a bit of a wanderer, and about searching for home in Australia?
I think that we have an issue culturally, not just in Australia, but I think in general, in terms of Western culture, that we think about home in a bit of a reductive sense, like that you have a home. And I think what I've learned over time is that that's just one perspective that you can take on home, but it's actually the worst one. A much better perspective to take on home is that it can be additive, that you can have multiple homes, and that actually it gives you more. So that feeling that she has, that, you know, she's split between these two places, Australia and Armenia, and then that makes her not quite enough of either to fully belong. I think if we could flip that on its head, and if we could say, actually, she has this incredible belonging in these two places, and that is such a gift, and is you know, gives her so much more. She's got so much more perspective on the world, more perspective on herself, more cultural background to draw on. It's an incredible thing, and we need to think of it in that additive way, as opposed to that it takes something away from you, that it makes you not fully belonging to either place.
I want to take you back now to the start of our conversation. At the start, I asked you what being Australian meant to you before you were one. You described that kind of stereotype of Australianness. You didn't specifically mention home and away, but it felt like, you know, it felt like you might have had a little bit of a home and away vision in your head. With all that you've come to understand 9 years later, all the difficulties that we know we still face as a country, has that perspective changed, and is it still meaningful to think for you about being Australian as opposed to just being a part of this culture and this country that's constantly evolving?
My Australianness is really meaningful for me because it was such a personal project. I arrived here with the idea that we were going to stay for a year, we were going to have a fun time, and then we were going to leave. And circumstances have kept us here. And as I described in the book, I feel really, really torn about that. But I went through several years where I was struggling with many things in my life. And I had a lot of time to overthink everything because I didn't have, I was underemployed and sort of struggling with career, but also struggling with marriage and also struggling with life. And during that time, I was here in Australia and trying to figure out, could this place be a home to me and what would that mean? I identified that was a real issue for me personally. And then I went on that journey of, okay, well, how do I make this place a home and how do I connect with it? I will always be actively learning about Australia for as long as I am here. And I love that journey. I have created a home, and that's one of the themes of the book. A home is something that you can create through effort.
Ashley Kalagian-Blunt is the author of How to Be Australian, and she's describing there that active process that I think it takes to be a part of anywhere. Ashley, thank you so much for coming on Final Draft. It has been absolutely brilliant to dissect the ideas that you present and really kind of get a bit more of a sense of who we are. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Andrew. It's been an absolute delight to speak to you today.
Stories, ideas, music. 2SER 107.3.
It is. You are tuned into 2SER 107.3. Now, you're on Final Draft. It is only for a minute or two longer. My name is Andrew Popel. I want to say a huge thanks to Christopher Raja and Ashley Kalagian-Blunt. They both came on the show today to share their new books. Christopher's Into the Suburbs and Ashley's How to Be Australian really gave us a chance to examine who we are as a people, as Australians. Not the least of which is, you know, this idea we are on stolen land. We are on unceded land. We have not made reparations. We have not made treaty with the Indigenous inhabitants of Australia. And that really should be a priority. Now, look, both of those conversations, I spoke with for hours with both those authors. And you can get more of those conversations on the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. So please go and check that out. They had so much to say. I'm Andrew Popel. I will be back next week with more Final Draft. Till then, I'm going to say, look, happy reading. Stay tuned for more 2SER. It's bye from me. Look, see ya.